Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Coming up on today's show, a new look at Star Wars Outlaws. Blizzard Games are going back to China. And yes, I've also become obsessed with Balatro. Everybody, and welcome to another episode of the What's Good Games podcast, your source for video game news, commentary, analysis, and funny stuff every Friday. I'm one of your hosts, Andrea Renee, joined by Mrs. Rihanna Manuel Pena.
Yeah, we got a lot of stuff to cover today. I'm excited.
We do. It's weirdly a light and heavy news week at the same time. There's like a lot of small, interesting stories and a couple deep dives that we are going to touch on. We are probably just going to go ahead and jump right into it. But before we do, I want to say thank you to everybody who has joined us on our new platform for our What's Good Games premium membership at Supercast. That's whatsgoodgames.supercast.com. If you want to get the show ad-free, among other cool benefits like exclusive content and exclusive podcasts. Lots of stuff happening, and we will be rolling out that exclusive content this month. And thank you to everybody's patience as I onboard some of the technical features of the new platform. A little bit of growing pains, as it were. Some learning curve stuff. So I appreciate everybody going along that journey with me. Thank you to our super producers, Bored Apes Gamers Club, Ferris Atia, Joshua Franklin, Justin Foshi, and Punctified. And welcome, everybody. I know you, Brittany, read off like a list of names of people who have joined us and come over to our Supercast community. So thank you so much to everybody for that. I want to thank everybody who is also supporting us on Patreon. We will continue to do so through the month of April. As a reminder, if you didn't get the message about the Patreon migration giveaway that's happening, if you migrate before April 15th, you will be eligible for some cool stuff that we are doing. So be sure to check out that post on those pages. All right, without further ado, let's just go ahead and dive right into this Star Wars Outlaw news.
Oh, yeah.
This is a game I was very excited about seeing when they originally revealed it at Ubisoft Forward last summer. And we got a brand new story trailer, and it still looks good. Let me read a little bit of details that was written by friend of the show, Chastity Vincencio from Ubisoft, as put on the Xbox Wire. Star Wars Outlaws launches on Xbox Series X and S on August 30th, 2024, and is available for pre-order now on the Xbox Store. Set between Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back and Star Wars Return of the Jedi, Star Wars Outlaws lets you play as cunning scoundrel Kay Vess, who alongside her loyal companion Nix must attempt one of the greatest heists in the galaxy in order to win her freedom. So we saw a little bit about Kay and her little buddy Nix, who was super cute, when they did this lengthy gameplay reveal last summer. And now this is pretty much the first detailed look we've gotten at the game since then. They did do a Comic-Con panel last year with a little bit of more new information, but I'm pumped that we finally have a release date. And in her post, Chastity mentioned that there will be some new planets that you'll be visiting. Those include Canto Bight, Tatooine, Kijimi, Akiva, and a new addition to the Star Wars galaxy, Toshara, which is being developed, of course, by Massive Entertainment, the people making this game, and Lucasfilm Games. Now, in addition to a lot of the traditional Ubisoft bonuses that they give with their big AAA games, they gave some details on the Gold and Ultimate Edition in this post as well, including that 3-day early access, and all pre-orders of Star Wars Outlaws are going to receive the Kessel Runner bonus pack, including cosmetics for Kay Speeder and her ship, the Trailblazer. So if you guys are interested in learning all about those details, of course, head on over to Ubisoft.com. They have a really beautiful post about it, and you can pick out which version of the game you think is going to look good for you. Now, I imagine we're going to see more about this game at the recently announced Ubisoft Forward, which is confirmed for June 10th. So they announced that last week. Mm-hmm. And since this game is coming out in August, it just feels like we're hopefully going to get hands-on at Summer Game Fest. Maybe, fingers crossed.
It's close enough that we should be able to if everything's going smoothly. So it'll be a good litmus test for how confident the team is feeling.
What do you think about the gameplay that was revealed in this trailer?
It looks fun. It's hard to say without seeing it, you know, actually played through. It's always tough when it's a gameplay trailer and you know, we have HUD Watch here at What's
Good Watch,
Games.
That's right.
We're trying to see if this is actually a real simulacrum of what it'll be like when you actually get your hands on the game. But what's hard for me is like, I love that people love Star Wars. It just hasn't ever really clicked for me. So the gameplay could be perfect. And I probably would still be hesitant to jump in because it just feels so, so deeply invested in lore. And even like reading through everything that Chastity added to that post, like all the different planets and the different characters and the things that you're going to see, it's like none of that resonates for me. So being in a situation currently where I need to be very choosy about how I spend my time gaming, I don't know if the gameplay is enough to excite me, even though it looks really great. But I'm really happy for people who are thrilled to get into this like you. And I'm not trying to yuck anybody's yum.
Oh, no, I don't think that you are at all. It's perfectly acceptable to say, hey, Star Wars just isn't my fandom. There's a lot of fandoms out there. And clearly this game is heavily relying on that.
Yeah,
I do appreciate that Lucasfilm as an entity has taken some of the more recent transmedia properties that they've been working on underneath the Star Wars label and said like, hey, how do we bring new fans into the fold? Like things like Andor, things like The Mandalorian, even other games, like how different a game like Battlefront is from what we saw like in Jedi Fallen Order, right? And I love that they're kind of taking some risks and saying we want to provide different gameplay experiences for people who aren't like super nerds of the fandom. And as you mentioned, we don't really know how it's all going to come together and play out until we see it for ourselves. But I was pumped that we got another look. I'm glad that August is a release date. I think that that's a really good period of time to put a game like this. And
much better than last August, that's for sure.
Yeah, so last August, too busy, too much going on. But yeah, fingers crossed that at Ubisoft Forward, they will have some hands-on for us. We did get to play some games at the Ubisoft Forward event last year, so we'll keep you guys posted on that one.
Yeah.
The other big story that I wanted to talk about, I don't have as many concrete details as I would like to give you guys, because if you have been following What's Good Games for any period of time, y'all know I'm a huge Destiny girly over here. I am very excited that they had a brand new showcase. And because of everything that's been going on in my life, which I'll detail a little bit later on in the show, I haven't really gotten a chance to like deep dive into this over 20-minute showcase. I do have a little bit of it to show here. So let me throw that B-roll up if you guys are watching at youtube.com/whatsgoodgames. So what they announced in this new showcase is details about the Prismatic subclass and the Dread faction that are coming to the final shape, this highly anticipated expansion coming to the Destiny universe later this summer. So in this showcase, a bunch of developers talked about what they've been working on and gave us kind of like this deep dive look. Why they chose to do it at this specific moment in time, I'm not quite sure. But I do appreciate that they didn't necessarily tie it to another big tentpole event, which they've done in previous big marketing beats, because then it's so hard to cover all of this stuff at once. But I will say from what I saw in this showcase, it looks beautiful. I mean, Destiny has always looked great. I've loved the art in Destiny. The gameplay loop is great. Like, I don't need to, you know, wax poetic about, you know, my fondness and love for Destiny 2 as a game overall. There's clearly been a lot of ups and downs within the fandom over the last 3 to 4 years. And a lot of the developers in the showcase talk about what the meaning is of this 10-year journey culmination that they've been on, what the final shape represents to them and to players. And if you guys are interested in that, there's some really good breakdowns from some hardcore Destiny creators that, you know, I can recommend, and happy to do so if you guys want to reach out and let me know. But I'm glad that they're finally doing a new faction that's way, way, way overdue. Mm-hmm. Technically, they haven't really had a new faction. They've just been like reskins of other factions. Like the Scorn is clearly just like built on the Fallen and, you know, the Hive iterations.
They have helmets. It's a difference.
Right. It's just like, so that was always a big criticism I had as well. Like, hey, you guys are charging a pretty penny for these major expansions, as you should. It's a lot of work and a lot of stuff that goes into it. But it just felt like there was so much like rinse and repeat happening, which has been an ongoing criticism with the Destiny 2 community. Mm-hmm. So glad that we've seen some new stuff. Have you gotten to check out this new subclass at all?
I haven't. And I barely got into the Strand subclass. So I'm very behind catching up in Destiny 2, but I'm really excited to see these new updates and maybe a little bit more customization and a little more attention to detail and how this can be differentiated, as you mentioned, from previous updates. I think what I'm waiting for from Destiny is, I would say, a moment like Lightfall, but it didn't 100% get me back in. I played a lot of Lightfall content, but definitely didn't finish it. I'm just waiting for another big must play, must experience moment to have everybody come back and there's enough people playing that I can actually get into a party the way we have with Helldivers 2, right? Like at any given moment, I can text any of my group chats and someone's playing Helldivers and I can jump in for a few quick games. I'm waiting for Destiny to be in that space for me again and then the friend group that we play with, because it's just so hard to jump in, right? It's hard to casually play Destiny 2. And
yes,
if I were only doing multiplayer, even so, I would need to have the meta guns to be competitive. I would need to have all the subclasses filled out to be competitive. And what's really frustrating for me as somebody who loves Destiny 2, but does not have the time to commit to the grind and keeping up with the meta, or even just keeping up with all the content, is I get left behind so quickly. And I don't know what it's going to take to address that, or if it's even possible at this point, because at the risk of not satisfying dedicated players who are spending all of their time and should be the ones that the developers are addressing the needs of, they leave people like me behind a little bit.
You're absolutely right.
I feel like I'm
right.
So negative today. I'm sorry.
No, I don't think that that's being negative. I think that you're just acknowledging like where you're at with the game. And I know a lot of the people who listen to this show also are in that same position. You know, live service games are incredibly difficult to keep up with, especially when a lot of them are built around daily and weekly grinds. And as we get older as gamers, we have different commitments in our lives, including having children or work or taking care of other members of your family or your friends, you know, other community commitments. And that just means that keeping up with these updates becomes increasingly more difficult. And no, I think that's something that's, you're not on an island, all right? Like there's a lot of people out there that are like, yes, I know exactly what that feels like. And it's tough. You know, I think Bungie has done an incredible job making the content more accessible in the recent like 2 or 3 expansion, like in the last 12 months. But it wasn't always that way. And it still feels very overwhelming when you log in. But they have made some substantial changes to the quest system and the menu director and kind of how the game funnels you into the world. There's a lot more guidance than there used to be. So I will say for people who have been away and maybe want to get back in and get into shape before the final shape happens, which I do anticipate being that water cooler moment for Destiny again, it's definitely a lot of improvements have been rolled out and I highly encourage you to take a peek at them. I do just want to read off the description from the Eurogamer article that I pulled about what the new subclass is. So the new subclass is called the Prismatic subclass, uses a bunch of different elements. So it says, once both sides of a new light and dark meter are filled by using respective damage types, prismatic players can access a new power level known as Transcendence. This gives all classes a unique grenade combining both light and dark, where hunters get an additional fire and ice combo, and titans get a strand and arc combo, and warlocks get a stasis and void combo. So that's probably a little too in the weeds for people who are like, I don't play Destiny. What does all that mean? The way that the weapon bonus damages work and things like that, I'm not going to, again, get hint. I'm not going to nerd out too much because I know sometimes when we go too deep into some of those stats, people are like, but I don't play this game. What does that all mean? But new weapons are coming, obviously, new biomes, a lot of new stuff happening. And for people who are looking to jump back in or maybe dip their toes back in, check out the showcase. Lots coming from Bungie and Destiny 2 in the lead up to the final shape happening this summer, June 4th. So not a convenient time for us in the media,
like maybe the
with everything happening
time.
With Summer Game Fest, but you know, still going to play, still going to find some time, going to make it happen. We have some headlines coming up, including a little blurb about Blizzard Games going back to China and a very popular deck building roguelike announced its sequel. But before we do that, we're going to take a quick break to listen to an ad to help support the show. And if you want to help support the show but not listen to an ad, what's good games at supercast.com. Welcome back. Let's get into some headlines. Up first, Microsoft Gaming and NetEase deepen their relationship with a strategic partnership based on their shared desire to bring new gaming experiences to players across platforms and markets. Can you can tell someone in corporate communications wrote that line? Because I certainly can. Keep doing the work. It's hard, corporate comms. It's a thankless job, typically. All right, so a couple of details about what this all means. Blizzard has confirmed that it struck a new deal with NetEase to bring all of the games covered by the previous publishing agreement, which includes World of Warcraft, Hearthstone, and other titles in the Warcraft, Overwatch, Diablo, and StarCraft universes, back to the Chinese market. This new deal will take effect sometime this summer. Blizzard games were temporarily unavailable to Chinese players after the previous publishing deal with NetEase expired back in January of 2023 due to what was described as material differences on key terms. No new deal was made until now, that is. Given the gigantic player base in China, both parties stand to benefit from the deal, and perhaps Microsoft's acquisition of the publisher was a factor in the deal finally getting done. I am not surprised by this. I'm glad it got done. It was only, what, a year and a couple months? Well, probably be 18 months all said and done of those games being gone. But yeah, I'm sure Blizzard absolutely wants their games being bought and played by people in China.
It's like you don't want to like negate an entire sector of the planet from being able to play your game. Like that's not good business practice. So well done. Happy all around. More players equals more fun. So good news.
What's up next, Rihanna?
Ubisoft Forward is confirmed, as Andrew mentioned earlier in the show, for June 10th. So the live event returns to Summer Game Fest. No details were revealed about what they're going to show, but Ubisoft has several games in development, including, as we mentioned, Star Wars Outlaws, The Division Heartland, and multiple Assassin's Creed games. Personally, we're looking forward to whatever pop star will perform the obligatory Just Dance portion of the show.
I had to throw that line in because it's one of my favorite parts of every Ubisoft E3 press conference. And I'm still probably going to use the term E3 until Summer Game Fest gets like whatever branding down that they're going to be doing with everybody for June. Yep. But every year, Ubisoft does something for Just Dance. Some kind of dance performance. There's somebody singing. And who's it going to be this year?
It could be Megan Thee Stallion. I'd be happy about
that. Oh my gosh. That would be so incredible.
I can dream.
Yes.
I just dream of meeting her someday. Just being in the same room as her. I'd pay money. I would.
I feel like we can make that happen. We'll figure it out.
It feels like it's possible. Yes. Some constellation of events in my life will lead me to Megan Thee Stallion. I'm manifesting it.
We're putting it into the universe, everybody. Megan Thee Stallion and Rihanna Manuel Pena will besties. Cross paths. Next up, Prince of Persia is going roguelike. Dead Cells developer Evil Empire revealed a new trailer this week showcasing their upcoming game, The Rogue Prince of Persia. The trailer showed a Metroidvania-inspired platformer with some roguelike elements. If I didn't make it clear that it's a roguelike platformer. Players will get to see how the mashup of genres comes together very soon. Early access begins May 14th.
Very exciting. That's all I gotta say. I'll play it.
Perfect.
Prince of Persia, short gameplay, and you made the two. I'm on board. More in roguelike news, the deck-building roguelike Slay the Spire is getting a sequel. So originally, it was released on PC in 2019, and the cult favorite game sequel will feature three characters from the original, the Ironclad Knight, the Silent Huntress, and a new skeletal necromancer called the Necrobinder. And there are a few details available for Slay the Spire 2, other than that early access is beginning in 2025. So we got a little bit of time to get excited for that one, but I mean, Slay the Spire was a huge hit. Like, people still are finding it to this day. I think it's a good time to come back. It's been enough years for people to catch up on the first one. So I'm excited. Again, quick gameplay, in and out. I'm here for it. I love these short experiences that I can pick up and put down when I have the time. So thumbs up for me.
And it's available on Apple Arcade now, too. It's basically available on pretty much every platform. So if you missed it and you're into deck builders, yeah, and you want to get caught up before early access on part two begins, you've got a year, it sounds like.
You got some homework.
Next up, Xbox President Sarah Bond has set up a new team dedicated to game preservation and forward compatibility. The backwards compatibility program will continue on future Xbox hardware. Hooray!
Yay! We love that. We love that for us.
This is great. Per emails received by the Windows Central team and confirmed by Microsoft as genuine, Xbox President Sarah Bond briefed her team on topics in those emails and called it the biggest technical leap ever in a generation, referring to the new Xbox hardware focused on their goals for the future of Microsoft gaming. So
it's always the biggest leap, right? Like every time.
Correct. You nailed it.
Just leaping bigger and bigger every time.
And it's like, well, like trying to one up yourself on that is truly impossible. And now it just becomes a joke. So maybe find some like different language. As we just discussed, corporate comms, thankless job. But hey, come on, guys. I believe in you. You can do it. Some of the other details from that story, Sarah Bond revealed that Microsoft has set up a dedicated team to future-proof their digital game library across their hardware, including, quote, build on Xbox's strong history of delivering backwards compatibility. So I appreciate that they're just getting out in front of that and saying, hey, let's talk about this, because we chatted about the concerns that we had about Nintendo's comments about their hardware going forward and how they didn't lay out a very clear plan for what backwards compatibility was going to look like. And they've had, I don't want to use the term wishy-washy, though that was the first thing that came to my mind about what their commitment to backwards compatibility has been over the course of Nintendo's hardware over the decades. But I like that Xbox is saying, hey, we know that this is important to players. So good news, everybody.
Yeah.
It's important to us too.
What are we going to teach our kids to play on? You know, like we got to pull Diablo 4 up when they're young. Make sure that they get that experience.
Oh my gosh. Maybe not like the game filled with demon and monsters and lots of violence and blood.
Hey,
maybe
religion.
Maybe like a Viva Pinata moment instead.
Oh my God. If Viva Pinata were ever lost to the sands of time, that'd be really sad. Another Prince of Persia reference there.
Yes.
Moving on to our last headline. This one is full of allegations and unconfirmed stories, so we won't spend too much time on it, but Deck Nine is accused of studio toxicity culture. And this is a piece from Rebecca Ballantyne over at IGN. Rebecca, we know and love her. She's done amazing journalistic work over there at IGN and other places. But none of this information is confirmed, so we won't go over it in detail. But what we really love about what Deck Nine has done with the Life is Strange series specifically is that it's so important and people feel so seen. And there are very clearly individuals within that studio who are fighting for that representation, who are fighting for that voice to be heard. We support them. And we love that they're able to get this work out and hope that they can continue to do so in the future. Not going to comment on allegations or anything else because it's not what we're here for.
Exactly. I do want to say a little bit more. Obviously, I have done many projects with Deck Nine and the Life is Strange team. We as a brand at What's Good Games have done several What's Good Games and Life is Strange sponsored fan events, which were phenomenal experiences where our community got together to celebrate being passionate gamers and having an inclusive, safe space. And so when this story came out from Rebecca on IGN, and I do encourage everybody to go read the extensive reporting that Rebecca did and give her those clicks because she absolutely deserves them. It was incredibly troubling. I'm not going to pretend like I wasn't unsettled when I read her story about, you know, hidden hate symbols and hate speech buried in art assets and a pattern of toxicity and harassment with certain people at the studio. Like whenever you hear that kind of stuff, you know, it shakes you and you never want people to feel unsafe in their workplace, especially when they're working on such important things like the Life is Strange franchise and how critical that was to representation to lots of different kinds of gamers out there. And so when the story came up, you know, like I got upset like a lot of you did. And I really grappled with like, how do we cover this? Like, do we just like regurgitate what Rebecca wrote? And that didn't feel like the right thing because quite frankly, her article is very long and very in-depth and you guys should just go read her reporting on it. Deck Nine as a studio did make a very lengthy response to her article as well, which I thought was great that they came out and said, hey, this is what we're committed to. These are the things we want to do. This is what we prioritize at our studio. And, you know, we always are striving to do better and to represent more people and to create safe spaces as well. And, you know, we want to be able to take them at their word. So all we're going to leave it at is, you know, we encourage you to use critical thinking and go look at these stories and, you know, try to decide for yourself how you're going to process that information. But for us, you know, we've been grateful for the work that we've gotten to do with them in the past. And quite frankly, I'm grateful that those stories got told, that Absolutely. A lot of that representation made it into games where it might not have otherwise. And I hope that those teams continue to work on that kind of narrative design, because it's truly important to this industry.
It is. And we're grateful that people felt supported enough to make it happen, regardless of the situation that their workplace is going through. They were able to bring that to us. So thank you.
Yes, absolutely. All right, that is going to do it for this week's headlines. We're going to take another quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about what we've been playing, including my new obsession with Balatro. That's right, I gave in. Be right back. Welcome back, everybody. That's right, you heard me correct. I've installed Balatro on my Steam Deck, and I've been playing it nonstop. So, Rihanna, I first learned about Balatro from Blessing Adeoye Jr. over at Kinda Funny. He and I hosted KFGD together a few weeks back, a month back. What is time?
What is it?
And it was in the news for some ratings stuff that has clearly gotten sorted out. But he was like, if you haven't tried it, you should try it. And I am a longtime poker player, love playing cards. So I was like, okay, I'll give this game a whirl. Was not prepared to become as obsessed with it as I am. It's just so, so good. So let me show you a little bit of gameplay here. This is the official release trailer that came out. What I really love about Balatro as a card game is that it doesn't have the same in-depth RPG mechanics that you would get from a traditional deck builder. Instead, you're working with a very standard 52 set of cards. If you've ever played any kind of playing card game, these cards are familiar. You've got your aces, your kings, your queens, right? And then your numbered cards. So you're not working with specialty cards. Where the specialty cards come in are in the form of jokers. There's many different kinds of jokers in the game. I think there's over 50 different kinds of jokers in the game. And the jokers are the ones that have special abilities that really can change the way that your hand unfolds. You can also apply special abilities to the regular cards in the game as well. And then on top of that, you can get a variety of enhanced specialty cards that act as like boosts or modifiers to the way that your scoring is multiplied.
So it's kind of deck building at the same time?
Well, you get them through each ante. So much like a regular poker hand, there's blinds. There's a small blind, a big blind, and then what they call in Balatro, the boss blind.
Okay.
So there's three waves to each round, and each ante or ante is what they call them. And then there's eight antes per run. And each run is color-coded to have a different modifier. So one run, you'll have one extra discard, or one run, you'll start your hand with $10 to buy specialty cards. And then you have to see how far you can get with that run. And then there's different challenges as you unlock and play more, different types of modifiers unlock, and you get to kind of keep testing yourself.
Okay.
But the game, in true roguelike fashion, makes you really work for it. I feel like I'm, even though I've played a good amount of Balatro at this point, probably 50 hours or so, I feel like I still haven't broken through. Like, you remember in Vampire Survivors?
Oh, yeah.
When you had like that moment where you're like, I just feel like I'm hitting a wall and failing over and over again. But then you have that one run where something just clicks, or you get the right drop at the right time, and you're like, you finally make it over the hump, and you're like, oh my gosh, I did it.
You're like, you start seeing in Matrix code. You're like, I get it.
Yes, exactly. I don't think I've had that moment yet in Balatro.
All right.
I'm still waiting. I'm like almost to the point where I'm going to start looking up guides to be like, okay, what am I?
Oh gosh, you're in
what
deep.
Am I doing wrong to like kind of get over that hump? Because the multipliers and the way that you use jokers becomes increasingly important as you go through each of the different rounds or each of the different antes. And what I think is so addictive about this game is that it's just basic poker rules. So if you've ever played poker, like, you don't have to learn a really complicated set of new scoring in order to be able to pick this game up right away.
Yeah.
It's like, do you know how to make four of a kind and a full house and put a straight of cards together? Like, it's like so easy in that regard, but then it gets so complicated to figure out, you know, how am I going to use the money that I make for each round? Which of the jokers do I want to keep or sell? You know, how am I going to let my hands unfold? When am I using my discards? that's where the strategy really comes in. And it really is a fun game in that regard because you can pick it up and play it, but then you can literally pause it anytime. There's no weird things where there's timers. And I also love that I can literally stare at the cards for as long as I want. And there's no pressure for me to make a decision quickly about what I want to do. And I love that as someone who sometimes struggles with puzzle elements in games. Of like the timing element, it's like I get stressed out when I have to make a decision quickly.
Yeah, and you feel like you can't think right, you know, like, ooh, I don't like a countdown clock. Who does?
Yes. So, I mean, for me, that was really the exciting part about getting into this game, that it was just super easy to pick up and play and also easy to put down and come back to at any point. And I am very much looking forward to unlocking more cards. You can look at your card collection, kind of see all the jokers that you've unlocked, and you can kind of look at your deck and put hands together. And then on top of that are these specialty cards. So they have spectral cards, tarot cards, and planet cards. And each of those cards has a different effect on your hand overall. For example, planet cards level up each individual poker hand. So you have one of my favorite cards, the Uranus card, levels up the two pair hand, which is the hand I play the most, is two pair. And so each card that you buy, it levels it up like 1 through 10. And then each time you buy a card, it means the multiplier scored when you play that hand goes up and up and up. So obviously you want to manage how many of the planet cards am I buying? Do I want to level up a flush? Do I want to level up a straight? Maybe I want to level up a full house. Mm-hmm. And then you pick and choose which of those upgrades you want to buy as you go through each of your antes, trying to get as far into the run as possible. Now, the one thing that I find I keep running into is I keep hitting the discard or the play hand button when I want to play the other one. And then I get really angry at myself because I could be really far into a run and then accidentally discard a hand that I meant to play and vice versa. And I'm like,
You know, that's not a you problem. That's a UX problem. Like when the buttons are so easily misclicked that you start throwing away entire runs, we need an update. That's
but
my opinion.
I think the trouble, though, is that if they have like a confirm button, it will slow down the pacing of the game if you have to confirm every action you're taking because you might hit the wrong thing. And I feel like that's part of the roguelike elements of this game, to be like, pay attention. Because if you're playing, you know, a very highly skilled combat-focused game, like a Souls-like or something, if you hit the parry at the wrong time and you're like at the end of a boss fight, it could mean death and you having to start the fight all over again.
Well, I don't like that.
You're right. I don't like it either, but it's part of the gameplay skill. I was just noting that I am doing that more often than I'm happy to admit. It's embarrassing for me.
Oh my gosh. So we not only do we need baby-ass baby modes for Souls-likes, we need baby ass distracted mode for distracted parents who play games.
I feel like all I would like, and this is just like a pie in the sky, if somebody who ever works on the Bellagio team is listening to this game, is like, maybe I can buy an undo card.
Oh,
like either like once a run or like once an ante, or like make it so that I have to spend money on it from my hand. Mm-hmm. Like, can I buy like an undo, like a mulligan card? Like
a rewind, yeah.
That could be something fun to use as like a tarot card option, because the tarot cards kind of have a range of abilities where they can put multipliers on your other cards. They can replicate planet cards that you've just used, and a whole variety of other special abilities to kind of increase your chances of making it to the end of your run. But overall, the game is super fun. It's very easy. It's also like very affordable. I bought it on the Steam sale that was just happening like a week ago. I got it on sale for like $14 or $15. I think it's like regular price is $19.99, but it's just so much fun. And it's $14.99 right now on Steam.
Nice.
In the United States. I don't know how much it costs wherever you're listening, but it's also available on Nintendo Switch if you want to play it there. And I believe a mobile version is on the way.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the mobile version.
It's also on, of course, on console as well.
Yeah.
So if you want to play it on console, it's so perfect for Steam Deck. So
yeah,
that's where I've been playing it.
Very cool. I'm going to get into it. It's on my list.
Yeah. Get into it. There's no way for us to play together, but we could play it next to each other.
Just in silence playing games on the couch.
Yes. I know we don't have too much more time, but I want to say that you and husband Danny Pena looked stunning at the red carpet premiere for the Fallout TV Aww. Series that debuted this week.
Thank you very
much.
And
you got to watch some of it.
We did. So at the Fallout premiere, shout out to Amazon and 47 for inviting us. We saw the first two episodes, but because Danny is involved with the team and has been interviewing some of the cast and creative team, we also have screeners. So I've seen 4 of the 8 episodes, and I'm not going to send any spoilers, but it is really good. And I actually tweeted this earlier today on the day of recording. This is Wednesday the 10th when it comes out, that the Fallout TV series is the best video game adaptation to date. And I wow. mean it. It's better than Mario. It's better than The Last of Us. It is the best, in my opinion, obviously. I think it's just really compelling that they've taken all of the lore and the world building and, you know, the vast history of Fallout that we have. And this is canon, and it fits, and it feels like Fallout. It looks like Fallout. It makes Danny want to go play Fallout. I don't play Fallout games, but I can see where that hand from Bethesda being involved is definitely apparent, but it's not a direct lift story, right? So they don't have to hit certain beats. They don't have to have certain lines. They don't have to show specific characters. It's truly an original story that fits seamlessly within everything that you know about Fallout. And it just feels like you're in that world. It's very successful.
We don't need to say any more about this. I'm hoping to get friend of the show, Emily Rose, on to talk about the Fallout series. I know that she's been busy with her fantastic job over with the Smosh team, but
I can't wait to hear what she thinks about this.
She's the biggest Fallout nerd I've ever met in my life, so I must know what she thinks about this. So I'll be reaching out to her. But that's all we're going to talk about on Hands On this week. I do want to note that I got to play several things at the Game Developers Conference and got to see some behind closed door stuff as well that I absolutely want to talk about, and hopefully we'll have time to talk about it on next week's show. I'm sorry I couldn't do it the week after. If anybody follows me on Instagram, you saw that I posted that I lost my grandmother and had to fly home to help my family with things surrounding her death. And obviously I'm not going to get into that since that is, you know, very traumatic for me. But just know that if you are out there and you're also going through a tough time, it's okay to step away from stuff. And I really appreciated that you and Brittany came in and helped me out with that. And so if you guys are wondering where the GDC stuff is, it's like, well, sorry, stuff happened.
We'll get there.
And thank you to everybody for your patience with our Supercast rollout. It's been an ongoing learning process for me working with that team. And their partner team has been great in helping us get onboarded there. So your guys' support of our show and our premium membership option and keeping our voices in games really means a lot to us. And just want to say a big thank you for your patience in that, and more to come. So lots going on. Thanks for joining me on the show this week. We will be back next week, and have a great weekend, everybody. Bye.
Bye.